You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 27th of October 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, we've got mainly Muslim news today, or news that concerns Muslims, and a lot of it deals with the fallout from this beheading last week. I mean, we have really seen a sea change in the response to this, I think. In France, they've been projecting naked images of Mohammed onto government buildings. This is the government that have been doing this. They've arrested some 80 Muslims for supporting the beheading. One thing that I've noticed is when there have been protests against this or vigils or just some movement to recognize the fact that this is a dreadful thing that has happened to them, you don't see any non-white faces, or at least I haven't seen any. Now, we're told that this is extremist Islam. This is somehow not representative of Islam as a whole. But if that is true, why are we not seeing mullahs coming forward and imams coming forward and condemning this attack? Why is it that we are only seeing white people condemning this attack? Another strange side to this is that Emmanuel Macron is now becoming an avatar for the counter-jihadis, and he is now the enemy number one of Islam, is Emmanuel Macron. French President Emmanuel Macron has vowed to take the fight to Islamic radicals after the October 16th beheading of a history teacher who had shown cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad to pupils in a class discussion on free speech. So Macron thinks what he's taking on here is the Islamic radicals. But in actual fact, what he has done by projecting images of naked Muhammad onto these buildings is enraged the entire Muslim world, which tends to say that it is not radical Islamics that support this, but the Muslim world. And I mean, it's quite obvious that they see this as blasphemy. They are all going to be insulted by this, not just the fundamentalists. And this is going to be more likely to get them to support the extremists all the more. I would suggest it sort of says to them, well, they are justified in doing this because look, that the president supports insulting the prophet in such a way. And these are just the sort of problems that you have with diversity. This is what multiculturalism brings with it. It brings a clash between two different cultures, between two different religions. We are not all part of the same religion. We do not all worship the same God. We have different religions because they look at the world in different ways. If they looked at the world in the same way, it would all just be one religion, wouldn't it? And it's not. It's the same as we have different races. And the religions are reflections of the races that came up with them. They are a reflection of the soul of that race. This is why Judaism is very different. It reflects the Jewish racial soul. Christianity is very different. It reflects the European racial soul. Islam is very different. It reflects the Arab racial soul. And that is the true diversity. But if you put them all together in one territory, you are just asking for trouble. Macron's comments triggered protests in Muslim-majority countries at the weekend, with people burning pictures of Macron in Syria and setting fire to French flags in the Libyan capital of Tripoli. This is also taking place in other countries, Pakistan and elsewhere, because you could say, well, Syria and Tripoli, they're both war-ravaged countries. They've got a lot of Islamic extremism in those countries. But it's not just these countries that are war-ravaged. It's rich countries as well. Boycotts of French goods are underway in supermarkets in Qatar and Kuwait, with further calls to spurn French products in Jordan and other states. And again, this shows you that this is not just the Islamic radicals. And instead of seeing the leaders of these countries standing in solidarity with Macron and condemning this horrific act on French soil, they are boycotting France. Because you cannot come to any other conclusion other than they support the beheading. If they're going to have protests and boycott French goods, then clearly they support this beheading, because why else would they be protesting? They're protesting that Macron himself has now shown these images, and the response to the teacher showing those images was that he was beheaded. And of course, that is what the Quran says should be done to the unbelievers if they insult the Prophet. So this is not Islamic extremism. This is the whole of the Islamic world that is now being pitted against Macron and France. I mean, you really could not have predicted this happening earlier this year. On Monday, the head of France's MEDEF Employers Federation said the boycott, which he described as foolishness, was clearly bad news for companies already hard hit by the coronavirus pandemic. But there is no question of us giving in to blackmail, Geoffrey Roux de Bézieux told broadcaster RMC. It is a question of sticking to our republican values. There is a time to put principles above business. Now, I don't think it's right to mock people's religions. And if this hadn't happened, I have no doubt that there'd be no idea would go into anybody's head to project naked Muhammad onto the buildings. It's purely because an extremist Muslim has responded to this by beheading the teacher. But we do have free speech in our countries, and you can mock religions if you wish to. And we've become so used to seeing Christianity mocked and ridiculed that we're shocked when Muslims don't respond in the same way and just accept it. And what that really shows is that Christians no longer really take their religion seriously, because we don't even see protests against the way that Christianity is mocked. And I'm certainly not suggesting that there should be violent reprisals for anybody that mocks Christianity, but I'm just pointing out that we don't even see protests against it. So people have become so used to that they expect that Muslims are going to behave in the same way, and they don't. I don't think this boycott is going to hurt France at all. In situations where you do get boycotts from other countries or you do get sanctions, then it just drives growth within that country itself. It means that the country has to resort to nationalist economics. And as we see has happened to Russia, those sanctions have been a very good thing, because it means that Russia now produces everything that it needs for itself. It is self-sufficient. Things like that just push countries into becoming nationalist more than anything else. He said the MEDEF supported the government's stance and urged companies to resist this blackmail and unfortunately to endure this boycott, which he said remained fairly localized for now. And again, there's an interesting parallel that we can draw here with these left-wing activists that go after major newspapers, and if they don't report on the immigrants in a positive way and they highlight immigrant crime and things like that, they lobby them to stop having the advertising. They lobby the advertisers not to use those companies for advertising. So they lose out on a lot of money, and a lot of these companies just fold. It's like Facebook. Recently, there was an organized campaign to force Facebook to censor more people, and that was caused by these corporations saying that they were no longer going to advertise on Facebook if they continued. And of course, Facebook gave in. But what we're seeing here is we are seeing these companies saying, no, we are not going to give in. This is blackmail. And this is what the left have been used to doing. And these people that complain about Islamophobia, they've been used to doing this and getting their own way. And now they are not getting their own way in France. After teacher Samuel Paty's gruesome murder by a Chechen extremist in the name of avenging the Prophet Muhammad, Macron vowed that France would never give up cartoons such as those which in 2015 triggered a deadly attack on the Charlie Hebdo satirical magazine and which Paty showed to his class. I do find it surprising, really, that they have made such a thing about this. I mean, they did in the first Charlie Hebdo attack. You'll remember there was Macron and Merkel, and I think David Cameron as well, and they were all marching along in this photo opportunity as if they had loads of people marching behind them, and they were showing this "We are all Charlie Hebdo." And in actual fact, it was just the politicians at the front, and then there was a huge gap behind of security before there were people following on. It was an optical illusion that they were actually involved in. But they seem to have made these cartoon pictures of Muhammad the hill that they want to die upon, which is really bizarre, really, when you think about it. I mean, there are contradictions with this, particularly in France, with the prison sentences that they give out to people for questioning the Holocaust. I mean, we even have people that are that are in Britain under asylum, because if they go back to France, then they could be sent to prison for a law that we don't actually have in Britain. So there are contradictions with this, and it is bizarre that this is the hill that they've chosen to take their stand upon, as it were, nude cartoons of Muhammad. Macron hailed Paty as a hero for representing the secular, free-thinking values of the French Republic, which include a long-cherished right to mock religion. "He was killed because Islamists want to take our future," Macron said at a memorial for Paty. "They will never have it." No, he was killed because Islamists want to kill people who blaspheme the Prophet. They want to kill the unbelievers. He is correct that they do want to take over France, and this is a little bit better than what he was saying last week about how it's our diversity that they hate so much. He is correct in that they do want to take over France, but the most immediate aims is just to kill the unbelievers, more so than taking over the country, I would suggest. Several suspected Islamic radicals have been arrested in dozens of raids since the murder, and about 50 organisations with alleged links to such individuals have been earmarked for closure by the government. And these organisations have all been anti-Islamophobia organisations, sort of left-wing organisations more than anything else. Earlier this month, Macron unveiled a plan to defend France's secular values against a trend of Islamist separatism and described Islam as a religion in crisis. It's not a religion in crisis, it's a religion that hasn't changed for 1400 years, and it's not going to change either. It doesn't have the facility to change. It's just the way that it is. It's our idea of Islam that is false, that is given Macron this idea that it's in crisis. Our idea that there is some mythical liberal Islam that exists anywhere else apart from in Europe, which is really just a scam, is so that they can say, oh no, look, we have these liberal imams that don't support the beheading of teachers. And when in actual fact, they're just there as a cover. And as soon as there are enough Muslims in a country, then it will just go to Sharia law, the same as all the other Islamic countries. If you look at all the other Islamic countries, they all have Sharia law, unless they are secular, like Syria, which got marked out for attack by the West because of its policy against Israel more than anything else, because you would have thought that they would support a secular Islamic country like Syria. But when you have this secularism and they try to look at things in an unbiased way, then they just look at the Israeli behavior to the Palestinians and they say, well that's wrong, and these Palestinians are Arabs the same as us, so we are going to support them, and that's what marks them out for attack. In actual fact, there was another Islamic extremist attack on the Syrian border yesterday, actually in Turkey. And even these countries that are Islamic don't escape from Islamic terrorism. This idea that there is a liberal Islam is just a pipe dream, and it's only really promoted by our politicians and by these imams that have taken money from the government in order to help promote this. And the reason why they promote it is because it provides a cover for what we call the extremist Islam. It provides a cover for the Sharia law interpretation of Islam, and they say, oh no, they've got it wrong. But in actual fact, all you have to do is look at these countries that are Islamic to see that that is what they do. Just look at Pakistan, just look at Saudi Arabia. They all have a system that is based on Sharia law that includes whippings and beheadings. I mean, they behead people for crimes in Saudi Arabia because it is Sharia law. So it's not Islam that is in crisis. It's the West that is in crisis. The West is in a crisis of its own making by inviting in our historical competitors, our historical enemies, in actual fact. The Muslims have been, they've always been trying to take over countries in Europe. They've never stopped doing that because they do that because they're encouraged to do that by their religion. So it's not Islam that's in a crisis. It is the West that is in a crisis. France has in recent years been forced to take a harder look at its core values, perceived by many to be threatened by Islam, following a string of jihadist attacks that have killed over 240 people since 2015. And I have to point out here that some of the ways that these people have been killed have been beyond horrific. They're just beyond the imagination of European people. I mean, you just cannot imagine the horror that the young people experienced in the Bataclan when they were tortured to death. And the actual savagery of the crimes that took place in that concert hall was so much that they had to be censored from the press. It was that horrific, the things that they were doing. I'm not going to go into the description of it, just to understand that it was absolutely horrific. This isn't just killing people or beheading people. It's torturing them in the most horrific of ways. And this is going on within Europe because our politicians invited these people into our country. Macron's stance has fueled tension between France and the Muslim world, with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan telling his counterpart to undergo mental checks for treating millions of members from different faith groups this way. And yeah, he's saying, well, look, you promote diversity, you promote multiculturalism, you invited our people into your country. How dare you treat them in this way? How dare you expect them to not want to obey their own laws, to not want to be good Muslims? How dare you expect them to want to be Frenchmen? You know, and he has a point there. This craziness of thinking that we can just import these people, and once they set foot on the magic soil, they become just like Europeans. There's no evidence to show that that is the case. All the evidence shows us that blood is thicker than water, and that these people will be just like their ancestors were. They won't suddenly change and become just like us. The comments prompted Paris to recall its envoy to Ankara. Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan has accused Macron of attacking Islam. So we have Turkey criticising Macron here for this. We have Pakistan criticising Macron here for this. And yet we're told, oh, it's just radical Islam that Macron is against. Mar al-Houli, a leader of the Palestinian Islamist group Hamas, condemned the comments by Macron and whoever offends the Prophet Muhammad, whether through words, actions, gestures, or drawings. And don't forget, what is being implied here is that teacher, Samuel Paty, he's being condemned as well, because he was showing the images of Muhammad as well. So they're supporting this beheading, and they're implying that the same should be done to Macron. The Lebanese Shiite movement, Hezbollah, and Morocco have also spoken out against France. So what we're also seeing here is this is actually bringing the Sunni and the Shiite together. Both parts of Islam are usually at war with one another, but in a situation like this, then they're both united in condemning France and condemning Macron. So we're actually bringing these two different sides of Islam together in this against us. On Monday, the Taliban in Afghanistan added its voice to the outcry, saying Macron's comments amounted to a stand against nations. And again, the Taliban are another separate part. They're not part of the Sunni Islam. So we really have got all these opposing parts of Islam that are now standing together against the West through this. The Taliban said it would be better if he carefully studied Islam instead of making ignorant Islamophobic remarks. So again, we see here that this term Islamophobic is what the Muslims are using to try and push through blasphemy laws in the West. They know very well how much of a benefit it is to have this idea of Islamophobia there. All they have to look at is the way that the Jews use the accusation of anti-Semitism to shut down criticism, to see what a wonderful gift this is for Muslims to have this word Islamophobia that's now being used in the West. The head of the Amman Chamber of Commerce, Khalil Haj Taufik, in a letter to the French ambassador to Jordan, called on Macron to apologise to the Islamic world. France's culture minister, Roselyne Bachelot, insisted Monday on BFM TV that there was no fight against French Muslims, there was simply a fight against Islamism and terrorism. Again, but if you are going to be showing images of the Prophet, that goes against Islam. That is blasphemy to them. So the French establishment thinks it's just going against the extremists, but the Muslim world sees it as you're going against all of us. So what does that say? Well, that says that all the Muslim world is extremist, doesn't it, really? If that's what's going on here, if France is saying that this is only directed at extremists and yet the whole of the Islamic world responds, that implies that the whole of the Islamic world is extremist. Fresh protests are planned on Monday in the Gaza Strip and on Tuesday in Iman. And lest we think that beheadings is something strange and out of place in Islam, there was a mass beheading this week of 20 people in Tanzania, in Africa. The Islamist terrorists operating in the northern Mozambique province of Cabo Delgado have carried their war across the border into Tanzania, where they murdered and beheaded 20 people on Wednesday night, according to a report in Monday's issue of the independent news sheet Carta de Mozambique, citing Tanzanian sources. The raid was against the village of Kitaya in Mutawara province near the border with the Cabo Delgado district of Palma. The raiders burnt down houses, destroyed an armoured vehicle and stole money and military equipment. The terrorist network that calls itself Islamic State claimed responsibility for the attack and said it had killed 3 Tanzanian soldiers. Videos and photographs circulated by the terrorists on social media show them decapitating a man and throwing his head onto a road. And that's exactly what the Chechen extremist did to Samuel Paty, the teacher. He beheaded him, threw his head down onto the road, and then took a photograph of it and sent it on social media. So the same things that are happening in Africa are now happening within Europe. In the videos, the murderers speak in Swahili, which is the lingua franca of much of East Africa, including Tanzania, in Emakua, one of the main languages of northern Mozambique, and in Kimwani, only spoken in a few Cabo Delgado coastal districts. One of the terrorists can be heard saying, "We have nothing to do with the coming elections in Tanzania. We are here and we are going to kill and leave his head on the road. They are pigs. God is great." In a second video, terrorists are tearing up a poster of Tanzanian President John Magufuli, who is standing for a second term of office. "Here is the face of Magufuli, which means we are in his country. We are the Al-Shababs of Mozambique, and we have come here to teach you our doctrine." The Cabo Delgado group have been known as the Al-Shabab, colloquially, for at least 3 years, and now seem to be using the name themselves. They are not known to have any formal connection with the Somali terrorist group of that name. And John Magufuli, the Tanzanian president, he's actually quite good. He's a nationalist. He's the guy that showed up the World Health Organization and their COVID tests when he sent in a sample from a goat and a pineapple and some African fruit, and they all came back as testing positive for COVID. And he now claims that his country has no more COVID-19, and he's closed down the COVID-19 sections of the hospitals. Whether that's true or not, we don't know. Part of it could be that I should imagine probably about 60% of Tanzania is under the age of 30. So they're not really likely to have problems with COVID. But he seems like a good man, actually, John Magufuli. Carl in the chat room dropped in an article on him over the weekend that showed him as being a good nationalist leader, basically, for the Africans. And of course, we support all nationalists here at Radio Albion, wherever they are from. Getting back to Britain here with the next news story that I've got here, and this concerns, unfortunately, it concerns another Muslim. I don't really want it to seem like we're picking on Muslims here, but these are the main news stories today. We have this inquiry into the Manchester bombing, and we've also had this beheading in France last week. And at the Manchester inquiry, it seems to be coming out that there was a Muslim security guard there that really should have known better. And rather than sounding the alarm about his fellow Muslim with the big rucksack that looked like it had a bomb in it, he ignored the requests to do so. Suicide bomber Salman Adbidi was smiling as he walked to his death and murdered 22 bystanders by detonating his homemade bomb, a public inquiry has heard. Adbidi, 22, was on his mobile phone as he made his final walk, after waiting for crowds to emerge at the end of a concert at Manchester Arena in 2017. Seconds later, he detonated his device, packed with 3,000 nuts and bolts. Showsec security guard Mohammed Agha told the inquiry he was not initially suspicious of Adbidi. Mr. Agha had seen Adbidi outside the Ariana Grande concert on the 22nd of May 2017, dressed all in black and carrying a big bulky rucksack. Three times earlier that night he had seen him, but he did not think him suspicious until minutes before the bombing, when he agreed that it crossed his mind that Adbidi might be a suicide bomber. He denied that he had fobbed off a member of the public, Christopher Wilde, who came to him to report his suspicions about Adbidi at about 22:15 hours British summertime. And that was probably the member of public who said that they reported it to a security guard and they were told something about political correctness. And there was another report that somebody went and reported it to a security guard and they were told, oh, the guy's probably just praying. Don't be Islamophobic. So it was one of those two excuses, I should imagine, is what this Mr. Agha gave to Christopher Wilde. Mr. Agha said he tried but failed to attract the attention of his boss, who was standing just 30 metres away across the room, by raising his hand. When Mr. Lawler passed by him, he spoke to the fellow Showsec steward, who had a radio, in order to report what Mr. Wilde had said to his superiors in the control room. As he and Mr. Lawler looked at Adbidi, he described the bomber as kind of looking nervous or kind of looking fidgety. He was playing with his hands. Mr. Greeny asked the witness if he thought one possibility was that the suspicious man with the backpack might be a suicide bomber. Mr. Agha replied, not like I did think about it, but it was not fully in my head. Mr. Greeny continued, do you agree it did cross your mind that this man might be a suicide bomber? Mr. Agha replied, yes. Families of some of the victims wiped away tears and others shook their heads as the witness continued his evidence. And again, there would be no chance of Islamic terrorism within our countries if our governments had not imported these people into our countries that are prone to carrying out these sort of acts, whether it's suicide bombings, whether it's beheadings, whether it's grooming gangs, all these terrible crimes that are associated with the members of this religion. I mean, just what is this huge benefit that they are supposed to bring to our countries? Okay, you could say maybe some of these Arabs, they've got a lot of money to invest because their countries are full of oil. Is that it? But why do we have to have them living here? Why do we have to import these people into our countries? What do they bring us that we cannot actually create for ourselves? What is the real reason for these people being here? Nobody can answer that. Nobody can give us this wonderful positive thing that these peoples have brought here. We were never asked whether we wanted to have these people in our countries. We were never asked if we wanted to be replaced. It was just forced upon us, and forced upon us by our own people. We must never forget that. It was our own people that did this to us. And it's only going to be our own people that can put it right. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.